Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. We're talking education during this back-to-school time of the year. The atmosphere of school choice in Wisconsin is the subject of study by people on many sides of the education reform debate in this country. But so is the experience of New Orleans, where the catalyst for education reform was Hurricane Katrina. Sarah Carr is an education reporter who formerly worked for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's also author of a book called Hope Against Hope, Three Schools, One City, and the Struggle to Educate America's Children. She joined us last year in the Lake Effect studio. Welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here.
Why is New Orleans such a useful example for examining issues of education reform?
You know, I think a lot of the tensions that are being felt in New Orleans are being felt in cities across the country. One's over the growth of charter schools, the right role for teachers' unions, and whether or not changes to the educational structure should emanate from within a community or be imposed from the outside. So even though a lot of these changes occurred much quicker and at a much more wholesale rate in New Orleans than in other places, it really is illustrative of the kinds of debates and tensions being felt across urban America.
Well, and can you set the stage for us a little bit? This was all a function of the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. That this was certainly the catalyst for what you write about in this book. Tell us what happened in Louisiana as a reaction to Hurricane Katrina, and how it played out in the subsequent months and years after the repopulation of New Orleans started.
Sure. There were two big changes that were made to the schools in the wake of Katrina. They had created what's known as the Recovery School District before the storm, but state officials used Katrina as an opportunity to significantly expand that. And so they pulled almost all of the city's public schools into the Recovery School District with the intent of chartering them as quickly as possible. Today, more than 80% of the city's public school children attend charters. And the other big shift was that they fired all of the teachers. Within days of Katrina, they put the teachers on unpaid leave, and then a few months later, they fired them. And so that has led to a significant shift in who's running and staffing the schools, and a big influx of young administrators and of teachers through alternative programs like Teach for America. So as you can imagine, those two big shifts were highly, highly controversial, but for good or for bad or for both, kind of led the way for a complete overhaul and revisioning of the public school system in New Orleans.
Your book takes this issue as it's playing out in New Orleans and filters it through three distinct lenses: a school principal, a relatively young teacher, and a girl who is just starting high school, and her family. What was it about those three categories in general, and maybe the specific people themselves, that spoke to the story that you were trying to tell?
Well, the main thing was that I wanted to tell the story of what happened from the vantage points of characters who had different perspectives from each other and also from myself to some degree. And so I knew that I wanted one of the main characters to be a student, because I feel like that's actually the least heard voice when talking about education, not only in New Orleans but across the country. I didn't want sort of one extreme or the other. I didn't want one who was sort of the top student in their class, but I didn't want one who, you know, was on the verge of dropping out from the moment I started following them. I wanted one who really could kind of go either way and who felt comfortable with me and who I connected with. And then in terms of the educators, since there is this big divide in New Orleans between veterans who were part of the schools before Katrina and the newcomers, I wanted one to be a veteran who had that perspective and context of knowing what it was like in the pre-Katrina school system, and I wanted one to be new to the city. And so I ended up focusing on, as you said, a veteran principal and a teacher who, when I followed him, who was in his third year and was an alum of the Teach for America program.
It seems like the simplest contrast to imagine would be in the differences between the experiences of this teacher, Aidan Kelly, who is this Ivy League and Teach for America alum, and the principal, Mary Laurie, who was a three-decade veteran of public schools. And yet it seemed as though there were similarities in their approach as well.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to sort of paint it, as you say, as like that they totally disagreed. And I think that the thing to me is I wanted people who came at this from sort of very humanistic, pragmatic lenses and not ideological ones. And I think the main similarity between Aidan and Mary Laurie to me is that they come at it from that humanistic perspective of wanting to do the best work for kids that they can, even though they have completely different life backgrounds and might not see sort of the reforms in the same exact way. I do feel like a lot of the conversation and debate over school reform has sort of been hijacked by ideologues, and that one of the main things my book offers is that that is not sort of the perspective that is privileged throughout it.
In fact, you write very early on in this book that one of the problems that you see is that well-intentioned people with the same essential goal in mind aren't speaking the same language from the beginning.
I think I saw it. I first mentioned that language gap when writing about a scene where there was a dispute over a particular school building in New Orleans. And there was two African-American men who were very respected leaders in the community, one who wanted to give the school over to a charter and the operator, and the other who was adamantly opposed. And a lot of the pro-charter reform advocates likened their efforts to the civil rights movement of the 21st century in America, and this leader who was much more opposed to the chartering of that particular school building sort of indirectly likened Teach for America and chartering and sort of the direction of the modern reform movement to slavery. And so I was just sort of struck by how, when you're coming at it from those two totally, totally different perspectives, do you even sit down and start to have a conversation? And I think I saw that language gap play out in sort of much more subtle ways in the schools on a daily basis, just in terms of the words that kids would use and the words that in particular the teachers who were new to the community and had not grown up in New Orleans would use. And a lot of times that made it harder to build relationships just because they weren't speaking in the same language.
Well, and at a very basic level, I mean, you write about there's a scene in this book where the teacher and students are discussing mm-hmm. why it's even important at all to be speaking the same language.
Yeah. No, Aidan, the young teacher who I wrote about, took his students on a number of college trips. And towards the end of the book, there's a scene when they travel to Harvard together. And I think it wasn't so much kind of overt language, but I think it dawns on him over the course of that trip that his students are really coming at sort of the college search process from a very different perspective and might have different goals in mind than the ones that had been inculcated in him since he was very, very young. So in terms of his character, I think that was a real turning point because he started to realize that he's going to have to communicate with students differently and be a little bit more open to ways in which their goals and aspirations might not be his own.
One of the lessons that seems to come out of this that I thought was most interesting was that it was almost like there was a reality check in this for reform-minded people, that even the best and most ambitious efforts of people like Aidan Kelly and Mary Laurie aren't alone always enough to make immediate change.
Yeah, no, I think that was the biggest takeaway for me, and I think is one of the bigger takeaways from the book, that you can sort of make all of these efforts to improve the schools, but if you have a broken healthcare system and a broken criminal justice system and kids who are living in communities where there's a lot of gun violence and have parents who have to work 80 hours a week just to make ends meet, that it's going to be very hard to revitalize a city in the long run, and that there needs to be a much more holistic look at poverty alleviation in this country, and that in New Orleans there needs to be much broader changes than just to the schools.
Well, and I thought one of the most interesting, we talked about the contrast that people might easily set up in their mind between a young, ambitious, almost aggressive teaching system and a veteran who has been in the public school system for years, mm-hmm. where that there might not actually be that much, as much separating them as we imagine. The thing that really did seem telling is this contrast between the idea of schools being about doing one thing and doing it especially well, and being about much more to a neighborhood or a community.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I mean, I do think there are real differences in the educational style and philosophy between Assai Academy, which is the school where Aiden works, and an O'Perry Walker, which is the school led by the veteran principal. But I think that there is, as you hint, this distinction between whether or not schools should really be kind of reflective of their communities and part and parcel of them, or whether or not they're almost kind of add-ons, sort of very much distinct and kind of aimed at kind of lifting students out of a community. And I think that the latter approach there really runs the risk of kind of being somewhat paternalistic, and that is something that reformers in New Orleans and elsewhere need to pay attention to make sure that they're understanding and appreciating the social and cultural context that their students come from.
You're right. It's interesting that even where ambitious and energetic teachers thrive, students still misbehave, performance still sometimes lags, and even those energetic teachers can get tired and see their own morale lag.
Yeah, I think there is a sustainability issue when you have predominantly 20-something teachers who are working 80 hours or 70 hours as a matter of course. And I think that will be a challenge moving forward if you see really high rates of teacher turnover at some of these schools. Another takeaway for me was that I felt like there needed to be more effort made towards creating diverse teaching staffs. In New Orleans, there were a lot of schools that were staffed predominantly by African-American veteran educators from the pre-Katrina schools who looked somewhat askance on some of the newcomers. But then there were others that were sort of all 24-year-olds who were new to New Orleans and to teaching and looked somewhat askance on some of the old-timers. And I don't think there were enough settings where you kind of built on the assets of experience and youthful idealism and enthusiasm at the same time.
Is there a danger in extrapolating too much from New Orleans, in particular the depopulation and slow repopulation of New Orleans is essentially unprecedented?
You know, I really don't think so. I mean, I moved to New Orleans in 2007, so it was 2 years after Katrina. And granted, the city still is rebuilding, and it is an unprecedented situation that faced them. But as I said earlier, I really feel like, having spent time in the schools there, that it speaks to fundamental disagreements about the direction of urban education, not just in that city but across America, and that a lot of the tensions that I see there on a daily basis are the same ones that I saw in my time in Milwaukee reporting.
If there was a key lesson that you think the experiences you chronicle from New Orleans has to offer perhaps Milwaukee in particular, and maybe the country as a whole, what would you say that key lesson is as education reform remains on the agenda?
I guess two. The first, kind of on a pragmatic level, I was really struck by the importance of school leadership. And there's been so much conversation about teacher quality that's become sort of a buzz phrase in recent years. But I just spent time in charter schools in New Orleans where, with depending on the leader, the same staff of teachers could really thrive or flounder. And so I think cities that are trying to improve their schools over time really need to pay a lot of attention to getting compassionate, experienced, knowledgeable school leaders in each of their schools. And the second one, which is one that I've already alluded to, is that we cannot sort of end poverty in this country with a focus that's just on children and schools. It really needs to be a lot broader than that. And I think, for instance, in New Orleans, there really has not been enough attention paid to the adults in the community and their needs. It's sort of like poor adults are like this lost cause. But I think that if you have all these well-intentioned, really hardworking parents that can't play the kind of role that they want to in their kids' lives because they have to work 80 hours in a casino or a hotel just to pay their bills. So I think these efforts need to be a lot more holistic.
Sarah Carr, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Sarah Carr is an education reporter based in New Orleans and formerly wrote about education for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Her book is called Hope Against Hope, Three Schools, One City, and the Struggle to Educate America's Children. And she spoke with us last year. We'll continue the back-to-school theme with the greening of the Marquette campus when Lake Effect continues on WUWM.